The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. And I got to mention that Mark is not here. Mark Sigmund is still under the weather. We hope he feels better. He'll probably be back in 2 weeks. But we have our, I'm not going to say B team, our A minus team maybe. Linda's here. Mark W is here, and so we're going to have a great show as we always do with Linda and Mark, because they're fabulous people and they have a fabulous recovery stories. Anyway, I have a couple news stories we want to go through right now before we start the show. First of all, CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart were fined $650 million for irresponsible filling of prescriptions for opioids, and that's a big hit. And we're hoping that these lawsuits, that, you know, once they come to fruition and win, that the money is distributed and it gets to the right organizations and people who deserve to be compensated for the opioid addictions that I'm not going to say were forced on them, but they were conned into, I believe, continually using the opioids. The next story I have is there's a cash crunch for Colorado's pot trade. This is the Denver Gazette. And this story basically talks about that, you know, once the legalization of pot in Colorado, once that hit, the sales were incredible. And now it seems like sales are waning for purchasing of pot in that state and probably in other states. And for some people, that sounds good. For the state of Colorado, they're not going to be getting as much revenue from pot, from the pot sales. You know, the epidemic, ate into this situation. And I think the newness of being able to go and get your pot sort of maybe weaned for some people. But I could tell you, it wouldn't have weaned from me or you, Mark, or you, Linda, right? I mean, if we were smoking dope, yeah, I don't care.
We wouldn't be here.
Right, well, exactly. That's right. We wouldn't be on Clean and Sober Radio.
We definitely wouldn't be. The last story, and to me, this is the most disgusting of all. I don't know if our listeners or viewers remember, a couple years ago in upstate Pennsylvania, there were a couple judges who owned prisons. And what they were doing is they were sending mainly young kids with, you know, jaywalking or stupid infractions to prison to fill their beds. The two judges, Michael Conahan and Mark Civiarella, one was sentenced to 27 years. One got 15 and was let out for medical reasons. But the point of the story is a lot of these poor – I don't mean money-wise. A lot of these children have become drug addicts because of the horrible experience they were put through. So to me, this kind of infractions are absolutely the worst. Two judges, they own the prisons, and they just wanted to fill them no matter what the cost was to the individual's family, or the community. just really disgusting. All right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take our first break, then we're going to come back and we're going to start the show. So don't go away.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campus in Devon, PA and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hi, this is John Hyatt, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're also heard on these great stations. KDWN in Las Vegas, Nevada. WHFS Tampa, Florida. WGAC Augusta, Georgia. And I also like to mention, we're also in Philadelphia, 97.5 HD2 at 3 o'clock on Fridays. Okay, we're back. I want to mention we have a new phone number, and because there's been an upgrade in the systems at the station, and so the new phone number, everybody, is 1-888-728-9941. That's 1-888-728-9941, and we'll repeat it until everybody across America memorizes the phone number. Mark, how are you? Linda, how are you? Welcome
great.
Back, guys.
Doing great.
You know, it's always comfortable to have you guys in the studio. I mean, because I know we can read each other. We've known each other mm-hmm. for so long. We're in the same boat. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
What's doing with you, Mark?
What's doing with me? Not much. I've been, keeping up with my legs, my doctor's appointments, and staying home with the dog and cooking dinner. I became a cook because my wife works all day, so I make dinner.
For the dog?
No, the dog. I just tear the thing open. Okay. It's all you. But no, I'm doing pretty good, thanks.
Good. Linda, what's doing with you this week?
Everything's great. I'm going to do a little shopping tomorrow. I might go to Lancaster for the day.
All right.
I'm going to take a little ride downtown and then Lancaster.
Right. So we can do things without getting high. I never thought that was possible.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So, you know, I thought today, I don't think we've ever broached this subject for a whole show. How does somebody know when they've hit bottom? And for people listening or watching, if you don't know what that actually means, the phrase hitting bottom is the point where hopefully you say to yourself, you know what? I got to do something. I don't want to live like this anymore. But how do you know when you think you hit bottom that there's not another bottom under the bottom? You know, for some people, hitting bottom could mean their Bentley got flat tires. That's a hit in the bottom. And for other people, obviously, for most of us, is, you know, you've lost basically everything. So, Mark, how do you know? How do you know? How did you know when you hit bottom?
My life was totally, totally unmanageable. And I had to believe that when I said this was my last one, it's my last one. That's why they call it the last one. And, you know, I just started a whole new life, and I didn't feel that alone anymore. And I had people in fellowships and places to go and people to see and speaking and listening and just, you know, surrounding my life with recovery. And that's not for everybody.
But that's after you figured out you hit bottom. I'm trying to determine, when did you say to yourself, Mark, I don't know what to do, but I got to do something.
When I had to leave my house with my mother in it, because she wanted me to watch Hollywood Squares with her, and I couldn't wait to get out.
Oh,
and if I saw Whoopi Goldberg, I would punch her, but because she was only the center square. And as soon as that those end credits came, I'm out of here, Mom. I'll see you later. And I would just ride around and get high by myself because nobody wanted to be in my company.
All right. So at what point did you say to yourself, I got to do something?
Well, the point I said something was I actually was dating a woman, and the woman said to me, you know, you're so whacked right now. I said, how do you know? Because nobody knows I'm high.
Yeah.
She said, you know, you told me that you drive around every night. Why don't you go to a meeting? I said, I don't know if that's for me. And she said, just try it.
Did you know what a meeting meant?
I never heard of NA.
Yeah.
I always heard of AA.
Yeah.
But I said, I don't even drink. She said, well, you could still go to NA. I said, well, all right, I'll take a suggestion, which was the key thing, me taking suggestions.
Yeah.
And I went, and they told me, dude, you don't ever have to drive around in your car ever again.
All right, how did you find out where to go? Because, you know, a lot of people, including myself, when you made a decision, there's really no answers out there. And most of these doctors have no idea.
No.
That's true.
Right? They don't know where to send you.
They don't.
How did you know where to go?
Well, it was just divine intervention, actually, because my friend said to me, listen, if you don't like the meeting, leave.
Yeah.
Leave, go do what you always do. Now, I hated doing that because that meant people didn't want to party with me, you know?
Yeah.
I would say, oh, I have this, I have that. Nah, you know what? That's all right. I'm good. You know, that's how bad it got.
Yeah,
so my drug of choice at the end was loneliness, and that fellowshipping filled that void for the last 24 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
You know, I'm glad.
Linda, how about you? How did you come to the conclusion that it was time?
So my life was a complete mess.
Yeah,
a complete mess. I just lived to drink. I just lived to go on vacations. I lived to drink, and I was, you know, the party girl and doing all this stuff. And one night, I was out with friends from work. I worked in the architecture department at the University of Penn at the time, and on Fridays, we always had a happy hour. The whole campus has a happy hour starting at 2, 3 o'clock. So, of course, I was pre-drinking with my two bosses. We had homemade wine in the closet.
Can I just interrupt you?
Go ahead.
You said the whole campus.
Whole campus happy hour.
Everybody on that campus was getting stoned.
Well, I was – architecture is in the art department.
Yes. Yeah.
There is a happy hour for every department
Linda,
on Friday afternoon.
Linda, we always thought everybody was doing it.
Right?
But I can guarantee
it
you.
It wasn't,
there were
right?
some. There were some kids at that school who cared who were studying. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
They were studying. Anyway. So one night we went out to Marrakesh, and there was a big wait, and we were all already plastered. There were like 15 of us, and we're waiting to get a giant table in the place. And somebody said something that made me mad, and I don't know what it was, but I was in a blackout. And I said, the hell with all of you. I'm leaving here. I'm leaving you. And I got in my car, and I didn't make it like 3 blocks. I had an accident at the corner of 6th and Mainbridge. And I hit another car really hard, and I had already had my license suspended that year. And so I start crying. The minute I hit the car and came out of my blackout, the tears start coming. The guy comes over to my car. He was 6'5", 400 pounds, minimum. And he just looks at me and says, why don't you pull the car over here and we'll talk? And I pulled my car over. He said, let me take you for coffee, he says. And he took me to the 7-Eleven on the Drexel campus for coffee. And then he drove down to the river. And we sat there, and we looked at the boathouse and all, and he told me his AA story. Now, how lucky was I that he wasn't hitting on me?
How naive were you?
Oh, so dumb.
In the car with this guy.
So dumb. But I was, you know, I was me, and I was in a blackout.
Right.
So I was like, oh, okay. You know, maybe he won't press charges. Maybe I won't get a ticket. And he turned out to be a guard at Greaterford.
Uh-huh.
So this guy said,
by the way, Graterford Prison, for our listeners and viewers, is a state penitentiary in Montgomery County, which is outside of Philadelphia County. It's
it's whatever, really something. So anyway, so this guy tells me his whole story, and I won't even tell you who he was married to, and he was married at the time. And he tells me how great it is, and the next time I saw him, I said, well, you're telling me how great it is. Why don't you take me to one of these meetings? It sounds fantastic. You're not ready. He was a real South Philly guy. You're not ready. You're not ready. You can't go yet. You can't go yet. 3 months this went on.
What?
3 months. You're not ready yet. You're not desperate enough. You're not at your bottom yet. You're not bad enough. So one night he came over after work, and he had an envelope with him. And I had already been drinking. I was pre-drinking. And he had an envelope with him. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll take you a meeting if you cannot do this. And he opened the envelope, and there was something, you know, white in there. So
what? What kind of craziness?
He brought it from the prison.
Oh, so he was going to see if you could resist the temptation of coke or something.
Something like that. It wasn't coke. It was something else. But anyway, so I couldn't. I couldn't.
Of course not.
So imagine sitting there in your own house. Somebody brings you something. You get high. They don't. And they're just staring at you with your arms folded.
He was looking for a date.
He didn't. No, he never hit on me the whole time. Because it's a long story. He was married to. There's a good reason he didn't hit on me. He would have gotten killed. Anyway, I finally got fed up. And I called him one night. I had the AA meeting guide and all. And back then it was on paper. And I said, I'm going to Lankenau, but I wanted him to know, so I call at the prison, and I ask for him to come to the phone in the middle of God knows what's going on in the prison. What the hell do you want? And I said, I'm going to a meeting. And he said, you don't have the guts to go to a meeting. And he hung up on me. So, of course, I left immediately for my first meeting. Couldn't find it, but I was so desperate and so ready that I then went to a clubhouse that we had nearby, which isn't around anymore either. And I went in there, and people looked so happy, and they were laughing, and they were having a good time. And I couldn't believe it. The room was filled with smoke, and they were passing a microphone that was about this big, a microphone that was plugged in, and they were passing it around. I didn't say a word to anybody. And at the end, a bunch of women surrounded me. They gave me a temporary sponsor. I did my 90 and 90, and I was just swept up by all the people, and they told me what meeting to. I went to. I did my 90 and 90 from that day on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're all lucky because for many of us, you know, once we make that decision, it's hard to find out what to do. That's why we say on this show, just like poison control on your refrigerator, you should have, if you're in addiction or you have a family member in addiction, you should have a number that you can call. Mm-hmm. Because once somebody makes a decision to get help, if you don't get them help quickly, That decision changes very quickly.
Oh, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And, you know, in AA, we talk about high bottom and low bottom drunks. I was low. I went down pretty far but I hadn't lost my job. They talk about losing your job, mm-hmm. having legal consequences, becoming homeless. And this one article I brought said that some of those people get so hopeless, they can't see a way out. So we try to catch people somewhere in between the high bottom, who's a high functioning drunk, and low bottom, which is losing everything.
Right. Hey, for just joining us now, I'm talking with Mark W., Linda E., and we're talking about when we hit our bottoms and what it was like and how did we find, you know, some relief from it, which is not easy. Mark, what?
I was very lucky. I really was, because sometimes people go to rehab and you know, they stay in rehab and they get out and before you know it, you're back in again. I didn't have to go to rehab. I just went to one meeting, got all mm-hmm. these guys around me, yep. told me you never have to use again, no matter what. Give me a good enough reason to use and I'll buy it for you. I couldn't give them a good enough reason.
Did you have the opportunity to go to a rehab?
I had the opportunity to work in a rehab, and when I was younger, my mother didn't believe in rehab, so she took me to Philadelphia Psychiatric Center, mm-hmm. and that was scary.
Yeah,
did that scare you straight?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Linda, you didn't. So neither of you went to rehab.
Not the first time,
right? But I mean, the first time.
The first time I got in, got a meeting, and that was it. That was it. Every day I went to a meeting. I had a sponsor. I loved it. I just loved it.
Yeah. I did go to rehab. But most people do not go to rehab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in big cities you hear rehab all day long, rehab. But most don't have the opportunity, or for whatever the circumstances, they get it by going, and it's free, to meetings and surrounding mm-hmm. yourself with the right people.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
If you're listening or watching us now and you need help now, call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Line at 1-800-662-HELP. 1-800-662-HELP. That's a real number. Real people are going to answer that phone, and they're going to do their best because they understand this to get you some kind of help. So it's really important. 1-800-662-HELP. And our new phone number, not to confuse everything, is 1-888-728-9914. That's 1-888-728-9914. 1-4. And, that's right. What did I say? 1-4?
Yeah, you said 1-4.
Wes is on it, man. He is on it. Okay. 1-888-728-9941. I'm not dyslexic. I'm just, maybe lazy. I don't know what it is.
Happens to the best of us.
It doesn't? Okay, thanks. Other thing, you know, if you're listening, you want to watch us, go to Facebook, go to Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch us, just like, we got a load of people that are watching us right now. And let me just run a Judge Maddox, Robert Brandis, John Brine, Mamie Dorshu. Stephen Sussman is still in Jerusalem, Israel.
Very nice.
That's far. That's far. That's a long – it used to be a long-distance phone call.
Right.
Catherine Link and Kevin O'Keefe. Everybody's watching. We'll get to the rest of people in a little while. So, you know, the idea of hitting bottom, I guess if you're lucky, you know, the further down you go, the worse it is, I would think. Or maybe the further down you go is more incentive to get clean. For myself, I was put by court, you know, the law. That's how I went to rehab. You know,
yeah. What happens is when you think that you don't want to go on living the way you like to live, you know, you have to do something about it. And I did something about it, and I took a suggestion. I tell my guys that I sponsor, don't ask me for advice. Let me share my experience. And that's how we learn. I was never asked to be a temporary sponsor because nobody has a temporary disease. You got it. You know,
that's a good point,
no
Mark.
Temporary.
Temporary. That's like pre-diabetic. Okay? That's like almost pregnant.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
Temporary sponsor. Yeah, temporary. Yeah.
You don't have a temporary disease. What do you want a temporary sponsor for? You know,
I never thought about that. I never understood that. This is what we're going to do. I've been told that we're going to have to take a break. I'll talk slowly. But when we come back, I want to talk about the fear that the three of us had the first time you actually went to a meeting and what that really felt like, you know? And we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
Hey, this is Mark Stein from Vanilla Fudge, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
I just want to make a correction on that number again. It is 1-888-728-9941. Wes, did I get that right?
You got it.
All right, good, good. All right, so guys, Mark, let me ask you first. Can you feel what it felt like the first time you walked into a meeting?
Well, I had the feeling before I went to a meeting because that's better. because there were guys standing outside. And I didn't know how to approach these people. Do I say, hey, I'm new. Hey, you know, I need recovery, you know. And believe it or not, like, this guy walked up to me and he said, hey, I'm Bill. Welcome. And he gave me a big hug. Now, you know, I like hugging people. That's, you know, I say now we hug people because we never know if it's the last time we're going to see them.
Oh, that's true.
So, you know, he made me feel instantly comfortable. And then when I went into the meeting, it was over in Bryn Mawr, and that's the main line. I didn't live on the main line. I just went to meet.
Was you 319?
No. 319, no. I never went to a clubhouse.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing is that they were so nice to me, and they said, you never have to go out by yourself again. We're here 24/7, blah, blah, blah. So I did a 90 and 90 and a 90 and 90. Mm-hmm. That's 90 meetings in 90 days. And then there was the fellowship part, 90 diners, and I gained 90 pounds. So
did you speak the first time? How long did it take you to actually speak in a meeting? Because a lot of people are terrified. I don't care how much time they have.
Because of that guy, Bill.
Yeah.
I spoke right away.
Really?
I wanted to let people know this is where I'm at, this is who I am, and I need help.
And you were the most important person in that room
That's night. That's right. That's right. Got a standing ovation.
Did you?
I still do, but.
Well, you're an incredible person. Linda, can you feel what was it like when you walked in?
It was really something that night because I was just looking at everybody, and it was a clubhouse, and it was filled with people. And they're talking. I didn't have any idea what they were talking about. They were talking about a step. I didn't know what they were talking about. And I figured, well, I'm in the back of the room because I came in late because I couldn't find the other meeting. I'm like, I'll just sneak out of here the minute it's over. Yeah. All I could think about was, am I close enough to the door to get out of here? And my stomach was churning. And I couldn't get to the door. These women surrounded me, and they pushed me in the corner. And they said, you never have to hurt from alcohol again. And that gal who became my temporary sponsor, she was a bartender. And I don't know how she did it. And she said she hit rock bottom. She knew because she had an anger issue when she drank. And she had pulled the sink off the wall in the bathroom where she works. Just yanked it off the wall. She was really something. And on my 90th day, she made me speak at the meeting we went to on Wednesday nights, and I spoke, and I never stopped talking.
Yeah, I know. we know that, Linda. You know, I would tell you some. Ted Klotz, this is interesting, writes to us, I hit bottom and stayed that way for years.
Wow.
Always getting by but hating my life and myself. We can all relate to that. The end and the beginning. Let me see. And in the beginning of my journey came locked up in a psych ward. That's frightening. I had prayed to God to let me escape this life 2 weeks prior to being locked up. God is good. So
he's right. You know,
that's right.
It's very scary being locked up in a psych ward, especially if you just need rehab and you didn't need a psych ward. I was so scared. I couldn't sleep at all. People threatening to kill me, and, you know, you can't go up to the CO and say, oh, yo, this dude said he was going to kill me. I just wanted to get out.
So wait, Mark, why were you in a psych ward? Your mother took you there?
Yeah, my mother took me there because when I used to smoke a lot of angel dust.
Okay,
so my brain cells, like, went bye-bye.
You were nuts.
I was nuts and violent.
Well, then she did the right thing.
There are people listening who don't know what angel dust is.
Okay, tell Linda, tell.
And it was green.
So PCP, right?
Yeah.
So PCP. So it's.
People have a very, very bad reaction to that.
Yep.
I had a client who got, his girlfriend or wife thought she was doing him a favor because he got like that. And she called the police just to calm him down and take him to the psych ward. And instead, three different places in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, came and they beat him up.
Mm.
And he didn't end up in the psych ward. He ended up in jail. But the good news is he got out of jail, came to my program, and then after that he had to go back in for a little while went back in and applied for some Outward Bound type program that the prison had, and you could get out a year sooner. And he called me when he got out. He was clean and sober after that Outward Bound thing, and he never looked back. And he has four kids. He's happy, and, you know, it's a miracle. But people, some people need to be pushed. If somebody hadn't pushed me to go, I don't think I would have gone.
Right.
However, my mother took me to an OA meeting when I was 15. So I had the step book in my hands since I was 15. So I think she wanted to take me to AA, but she had a friend in OA, so she thought. And I really didn't get what they were talking about. You know, I had no idea.
Absolutely.
But I had the book all those years.
Yeah. What was I just going to say? I can't remember. What do you have there, Mark? You have something?
About the dangers of believing the rock bottom myth.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Yeah.
What is
believing
that?
In the myth of rock bottom causes people to delay seeking treatment, which in turn leads to physical, mental, and social and professional consequences, some of which may be too extreme to remedy. Drugs and alcohol can damage your internal organs. You can contract bloodborne diseases, make your skin and teeth rot, damage your reproductive organs, unborn brain structure and chemistry, and causing mood swings, depression, anxiety, uncontrolled violence.
All right, let me ask something. So the myth is, I haven't hit my bottom. I'm not that bad.
Right.
Is that what that's saying?
Right.
Yeah, I get that. I understood that.
Yeah.
Back then.
If you haven't hit your bottom, you will.
But if you're so messed up, how do you know what your bottom is?
Well, I ask people, is this interfering with your life?
Yeah.
Is it interfering with work? Is it interfering with your family?
Uh-huh.
Are you in a custody battle? Are you in legal problems? Are you this? And sometimes the light goes on and they realize it before they hit rock bottom, and then they'll agree to go to a program instead of jail, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But it's you have to figure out if it's interfering with their life. If nobody's telling them they have to go to treatment, nobody's setting a consequence, mm-hmm. and they live on their own and they can do whatever they want, they're not going to think they're having a problem. They're keeping their job.
And it says it in the first step that our lives have become unmanageable.
Exactly.
But then you have to buy into that your life has become unmanageable.
Well, if you think if you think that waking up in the morning and the first thing you think of is, I'm getting high today. Where am I going to get it? How am I going to get it? Who am I going to steal money from? After that all happens, you get dressed and go to work.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I hung my hat on, I don't drink in the morning. I can't be a drunk because I don't drink in the morning. So I'd go to the refrigerator at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and I'd say, well, I can finish this wine or beer because it's not morning yet.
There's such rationalizations.
So what goes on in your mind is unbelievable.
It really is. You must have just said something, Linda, because Jackie Mullica said, she just said it, a miracle. We're all miracles.
We are.
Love the show.
Thanks, Jackie.
We're miracles? Are we lucky or what?
Miracles. I don't know. I don't know how we made it. I don't know how we made it.
Right.
Day by day, just for today, you know?
Yeah.
Just for today, I haven't used.
You know, I'll tell you something. I remember the day that I went to my first meeting. It was at night. And I remember it was May the 3rd. It was a Monday night in 1982. And it was at the Institute of mm-hmm. the Pennsylvania Hospital, obviously, in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I walked in there. And somebody said that they had 25 or 30 days. And I'm in my head. Now, I'm pretty spaced at this point still. It was the first thing. I'm thinking, this guy's lying through his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has 30 days. You know? I mean, it was just, I can remember what the kid looked like. I can remember, he was, I think, an Irish kid. He had red hair. And I can remember what he looked like. And I can remember me sitting there. And, of course, the first thing I did was judge this person. I didn't know the rules of the program, the rules. But it was I had a very hard time speaking, believe it or not, in meetings. I think it took me years to actually do it, you know. And then what I would do is when I first started speaking, I'd want to be the first one who spoke so nobody can compare me to somebody else who spoke.
You're setting the tone. That's what you were doing.
Right. Did you ever do that, Mark?
Yeah, but I love to speak. In fact, I got my sponsor tells me you got to keep your mouth shut once in a while. Because, you know, I was back then, back in the day, I was the rock star, And I was always, you know, kibitzing with people and singing and da, 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 da. Now I got to learn to take the cotton out of my ears.
That's what they said, right?
Your mouth, right.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not ever scared to share. Except for, no. I'm not scared.
Good.
Because I have nothing hanging over me, you know. Even till this day, I kid you not, I'm riding down the street and there's a cop car behind me. Mm-hmm. I still get crazy, nutty, paranoid. Knowing that my license is good, my registration's good, they're not going to find anything in the car, I just get frightened that those lights are going to go
Mark,
on.
Mark, there was a guy, I forget what meeting it was, and he was a cop. And he was in recovery. And he said, when he's driving and a cop's behind him with lights, he gets freaked out.
Yeah.
Well, that's the old messages. You know, you can have thoughts. You just don't either carry out on those, act out on them. And then you always have to determine, at least I do, what is the outcome that you want? You know, that's.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Linda, how about you?
How about you? You were saying one thing, don't compare, identify is a big thing. And I didn't understand. When I came in, I was so bad that my handwriting had changed. My comprehension had changed. I had never heard the Lord's Prayer in my life. So I figured I had to memorize it. It took 3 months to memorize it. That's how I was really close to wet brain, I think, when I came in. So, I mean, I could not concentrate. I couldn't do much of anything. My handwriting had changed terribly. My boss was giving me 6 months notice. He said, I don't want to put you out on the street, but you better start looking for something else because this isn't working out.
Yeah.
So it was hard. Talking at a meeting was never hard. That first time it was really hard. She sprung it on me that day when I had 90 days. And I said, oh, who's speaking about the step tonight? And she said, you're talking. I'm like, oh, my God.
I hated when people in a meeting, the person in the front would call on you.
Mm-hmm.
That I did not like. You know?
Don't you have your hand up?
Well, eventually I would have my hand.
Well, the most important person in that meeting besides the newcomer is the chairperson because that chairperson needs to have an atmosphere of recovery around. And, you know, you don't pick on your favorite guys or favorite girls or guys that you know longer than others. Or you have to just point. And that's where I look in a direction and I point. I look in a direction, I point, look in a direction, I point, and that's how it happens.
I got to tell you something. When you're saying that, there's a commercial in Philadelphia. You just point, and the trash goes away. This mm-hmm. company.
Junk.
Yeah, those guys.
100 junk.
So, okay, when we started going to first meetings, did you get involved, Mark? Did you get involved in the group? Did you go out afterwards? Did you made new friends? Did you greet newcomers at that point?
I did. And actually, it was my first meeting at my home group. My first meeting was Monday night. My home group was Wednesday night.
Yeah.
I decided to make that my home group because it was my sponsor's home group. And one of the guys came up to me and he said, can you be here a half hour early next week? I said, yeah, why? Are we having a meeting or something? He says, no, I'm going to teach you how to make coffee. So for years, I was the coffee maker until, you know, I thought somebody else would want to do it. And then when I moved from Havertown to Bucks County, I said, yeah, I got to get myself, in H&I. And this guy walks up to me with a suitcase full of literature. He goes, it's all yours, baby. He said that, you know, every Tuesday night, Bucks County Prison, you go into the work release and you give the message. I did that for years.
That really helps the recovery, you know. Yep. Linda, how about you? You got involved?
Oh, I got involved right away. They made me literature chairperson. Yeah. They told me to make the coffee. I was treasurer my second year. Not treasurer. I was general chair. My friend was the treasurer. Yeah, I was very involved. All my friends. That was my whole social life. I didn't have a social life before
that. Right, right. You know, that giving back. I always say, you know, clean, you get clean, you stop using, get sober, you start living sort of like a normal person. You give your brain time to rewire. And then that giving back is so important for your recovery. I mean, I'm talking about decades after you get sober.
Oh, I agree.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Phone number. Why don't somebody call in? We had a lot of calls last week. And if you want to, why don't you tell us what it was like for you when you first went into a meeting? How scary that was, or it wasn't scary. 1-888-728-9941.
You know, a lot of the sayings that the old timers told us, I don't know that I hear them in meetings anymore.
Right.
The don't compare, identify. Don't drink or use, even if you're, you know, what falls off. Like all those things
kiss.
They used to tell us. Kiss.
Keep it simple,
stupid.
Good white wine Willie. Direction.
Don't think, don't drink, and go to a meeting. That was white wine Willie, you know. And like, don't think, don't drink, and go to a meeting every day. And you didn't have to think about anything else. That's all you had to do was show up.
White wine Willie?
Yeah. Remember him?
No.
What was his name?
He was friends with Ed G, who was another Philly psych patient.
Okay.
He was a West Philly guy from the West Philly clubhouse, White Wine Willie.
But, you know, Linda, you're right. You don't hear.
You don't hear those sayings.
No.
And, I mean, they used to say things like that, you know, you won't drink no matter what. So one night I asked somebody to speak for me. I think I was 2 years sober maybe.
Yeah.
And the person didn't show up. And that was the first time that happened to me. Boy, was I nervous. What am I going to do? So John S. came up to me and said, this lady will talk for you. And just grabbed some woman and put her up there. And I do the stuff from the beginning of the meeting. I open the meeting and I say, da-da-da, and I'm introducing Joan, let's say. I don't know what her name was. She breaks into a song. She breaks into Call Me Irresponsible in her whole church voice and sang the entire song.
You must have been dying.
I was dying, and I'm looking at John S. like I was going to kill him. And that was, she said, that's the story of my life, how irresponsible I've been. She was older than me. And I was like, but nobody reacted like it was a bad thing. Nobody judged. I was mortified because I'm sitting up there with her, and I guess people thought it was planned that way. But, of course, it wasn't planned. But nobody got upset, and everybody just acted like nothing happened.
Why do you think that it's so difficult to get treatment when you've made the decision that you need it? Why doesn't the medical community have those answers?
That's a good question, because I work in a facility where we would not take major insurance. We only took, medical welfare insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would come in, detox in the middle of the night, and they would just like lay on the floor, and like you couldn't do anything for these poor people. You couldn't give them a bed. You weren't allowed to do that. And they had to go the next morning. They had to go over to the where the Social Security office is and get all that, because they don't think that they're going to need a valid driver's license or insurance or whatever, because they're using. That's the last thing on their mind, you know. But the first thing that's on their mind is when they surrender is, where am I going to get the help? That's why we have SAMHSA.
Well, I understand that, but I bet you could call 20 doctors and say, hey, where can I get help? They wouldn't even know.
No.
I've had that experience.
You're absolutely right, and it's a shame.
I mean, we're lucky, the three of us and many more. We have the resources. We know who to call. But you take the average person, and when that comes up in the house, is total chaos, and nobody knows what's going on. It's mind-boggling.
Well, I talk about that in my family sessions. So that's a whole other story. Who's to blame? You know, who's codependent? Who's narcissistic? Things like that. So it's a family disease.
It absolutely is. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue. I just like to know. I wish some people would call in what their experiences were getting in the treatment. It's a scary and difficult situation. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Diversity in the workplace is more than gender, ethnicity, and even age. It also means people in recovery. The Higher Calling Foundation works to end the stigma of substance use disorders in the workplace by helping those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all at no cost. And encouraging businesses to hire employees in recovery. Because with the Great Resignation, there are jobs to be filled, and employees in recovery are an untapped demographic. It's mutually beneficial, and it's simply good business. Started by employment attorney in recovery Kevin Heyer, the Higher Calling Foundation believes everyone deserves a second chance and works to make that happen. And now, diversity in the workplace demands it. Visit HireCalling.org. That's H-Y-E-R Calling.org. And find out how we can help you.
Hey, this is Darryl Strawberry, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
I want to make a correction. The new number is 1-888-728-9941. I just want to mention a new viewer. I think she's new. Coral Lee Intensio Stewart is watching. Kathy Wolf Collin is also watching. So, Lindy, what do you have? Do you have any?
The same thing. There's one article that says if you really wait till you lose every single thing, sometimes you reach a level of hopelessness where you don't think anything will help you. So sometimes if it's too late, you really have to do a lot of work to get the person to be ready. But once somebody, if people are so lost that they can't recognize they lost their job, they lost their family, they lost this, they're in legal trouble, sometimes people are just still in denial. And you have to find a way to reach them. They don't know that they need the help. They don't know that they'll feel better. They don't believe you.
You know, I'll tell you something else. You can go into recovery and then hit rock bottom. I mean, I know for myself, mm-hmm. I came out of rehab and then was arrested for something I did before. Years and years before I got sober. So once we get into recovery, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, the stuff doesn't go away.
Right.
And you think like, wait a minute. I just went through a program. I'm good. You know, like everybody's going to forget what
happened.
Disease
is insidious. It'll grab you when you think everything is fine, and all of a sudden you're using.
Yeah. Hey, we do have a caller. Eddie. Yeah, Eddie. I don't want to give his last name unless he does. Eddie, you on the line? Eddie. Hello?
Yes, how you doing?
Good, Eddie. How are you?
I'm good.
Where are you calling from? Where are you calling from, Eddie?
I'm in Warminster.
Okay, very good.
Let me turn that off. Yeah, I was just calling. Great show. Was just, going to my first meeting. I had no idea that I was ready. I went with a friend of mine that I had used with, and he had about 16 months. And I ended up going to a convention with him, my very first meeting. I didn't go
to
treatment.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Wow.
Somehow, the miracle happened.
Yep.
And, clean ever since.
So your first meeting was a convention. Was that a convention?
So I got my message just from going to that convention and seeing people smiling and living and look like they were enjoying their life. And I guess it was, it was exactly what I needed.
What convention was that, Ed? What convention was it?
Can you hear us? Eddie, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sure.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, Mark asked, what convention were you at? Do you remember what it was?
It was in Philly.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It was in November of 90.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't recall what hotel
it was.
That's
the EPGSA that's now in Lancaster this year.
That's Marlickness in Lancaster.
Mm-hmm. So what do you got? You got 32 years or something?
He's a monster.
Coming up on 31.
Good for
all right.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
In November.
He's a good guy.
You know?
Of course.
Well, everybody knows Mark Willing, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't know Mark?
Yeah, who doesn't know Mark?
Mark's a legend.
He certainly is.
My own mind.
His own mind.
Yeah, well.
So, Eddie, so do you remember, forget the convention, the next time you actually went to a small meeting, did you talk? Were you afraid?
I don't think I talked. Mm-hmm. But it was I went to a midnight meeting that night after the convention.
Uh-huh.
And I remember sitting there, and the literature rack fell over. And the three of us that were there went over to pick it up, and my buddy tapped me on the shoulder and said, welcome to service. And I didn't know what he was talking about.
Of course not.
But I understand today, you know, what service is really important.
Yeah.
Whether it's setting up chairs or just greeting a newcomer, whatever it may be.
You know, I don't think I ever heard the word AA. I thought it was the car service, AAA. That's what I thought it was.
Yeah,
you know, Eddie. Thanks. I know that you're a supporter of the show, and we really do appreciate it.
He's my man.
Yeah, love the show.
Thanks, man. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Safe weekend.
Bye, Eddie.
You as well. Take care.
All right. Bye bye. Bring Betsy on. Bets.
Here I am.
How are you, Betsy?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, did a great show. Thanks to everybody.
You remember your first meeting?
I sure do.
What happened?
I wasn't. We had to go to a meeting. The first meeting went to the first meeting in Austria.
Yeah, and come on, Betsy, come off speaker because we can't hear you.
Oh, everybody up there. Is that better?
That's better, I think.
Okay. It was a very large.
No, it's not better.
Nah.
Try it again.
Recording old number.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there's an echo. Is your radio on?
No.
Yeah, we lost her.
You're breaking up, Betsy.
Is that any better?
No, it's not. But thank you for calling, Betsy.
All right, take care.
All right, honey.
Thanks, Betsy.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Well, that's better.
That's a shame.
Now, Betsy's. I wanted to hear from her. You know, she's an old timer. What?
Old timers and midnight meetings. Like all that stuff has gone away. There's no midnight meetings.
Nope.
We used to be able to go any time of the day. There were so many more meetings in the past. Well, now that COVID passed, there are a lot less meetings. People weren't going. Some people weren't doing video meetings. And the numbers of meetings are really less, and the people in the meetings are less.
It's just like it's indicative of what's going on in the whole country.
Exactly.
Where'd everybody go? Nobody's working. Nobody shows up. And the meetings are closing. Less people go. What happened there?
Where are they?
I don't get it. I went to many, many, many Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I had to get help. I mean, mm-hmm. I had to, you know, suppose I was a brand newcomer
mm-hmm.
and there weren't any meetings open and I didn't want to do Zoom, I would be dead.
I didn't like Zoom meetings.
I don't love it, but it's better than nothing.
Better than nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. But now, meetings are small. Meetings are closed. There's nothing late at night. You know.
I know. You know, I didn't think about what you were saying. The phrases have gone away. It's like the old school stuff has gone away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to hear those same things over and over every week from these guys, and it really got into my head and changed me.
Yeah.
Hearing the repetitive things every week really made a difference for me.
Absolutely.
I loved it.
Absolutely. So we're almost at the end of the hour, and we've been talking about, you know, getting help, where to get help, first meetings, all the real elementary stuff of being in recovery. That's, you know, and I see a lot of people that I know that are watching that I go way back with, and they're still around, like James Huth,
mm-hmm.
Michael Vietz, Daniel Astrup. I hope I'm not butchering these names. There's still a lot of us around, even though we were probably terrified when we first went to a meeting. We stuck it out. We stuck out a lot of things. We stuck out not using anymore. We got new friends. We started to understand, I think, as our brains became rewired, what's right and what's wrong. And I guess cared, because I didn't care, but, you know.
I didn't care about anything. People should know meetings are free. If you want to try one, come to a meeting.
Yeah.
We're going to welcome you. We're going to be happy to see you. We're going to take care of you. And don't be afraid. Don't wait till you lose your house. You know, don't wait till what you think rock bottom is, because everybody's bottom is different.
That's right.
And you can stop digging that bottom anytime you want to stop.
Absolutely. Do you have any last minute advice?
I know that young women especially are afraid to put themselves in that situation because of what we call 13 steppers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I watch every meeting I go to. If I see a newcomer woman talking to an older guy, I get right in that conversation because, listen, he'll get her high before she gets him clean.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, everybody, I thought it was a great show. Guys, thanks for, you know, coming in again as usual. Wes, thank you so much. Brad, thank you so much. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Willig.
I'm Linda Elkins.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about the broadcast, please join us on our mission at Clean and Sober Radio. Broadcasting.com. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Everybody wants to share.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.